Is it Friday?
It is Friday.
We have to do this, right? We can't go just drink a few beers. Oh, the mic's on. Hello. Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Bloy here. Welcome to Friday the 13th. Hope you had a good day. Everything cool? Everything going all right? How far are we to the rapture? A week? Woohoo! Finally, some sleep, right? Podcast trivia a little bit later tonight. Stick around. And you might win. This hour, this first hour, is sponsored once again by a guy who sponsored an hour last night, Bill Bachman. He has messaged tonight, hope to see you again at the show where... That's in Seattle. Signed, Bill, the bowling machine mechanic. Remember, you set pins for 10 cents a line. I remember! I remember! Thanks, Bill. Bill Bachman, our sponsor for the first hour tonight. Got an email this afternoon. No, this evening. This evening. Matter of fact, just a couple hours ago. This is from Dan. I won't give his last name. He writes, Mike, I got a job, only $12 an hour, but a job that should keep the wolves at bay until I find something better. I have 40% of my retirement left to keep the house. I was making over $100,000 a year just a little over 2 years ago. It just sucks thinking about it. I came to within 1 week of my unemployment extensions running out. Literally 7 days. I start work next Monday. Nothing like having to go to the wire. I can't tell you how stressful the last couple of months have been. Despair and depression and desperation defined me. I'm a tough guy, but tears are rolling down my face as I write this. It has been so goddamn bad lately. The one thing I look forward to every day and still do is your show and my cat. Thank you, and Kathy, Dan. Well, that's, you know, I saw that. That's just very touching. Thanks, Dan. I'm glad you got employed. And you must be skilled in a certain field. Let's hope it, materializes for you again. You know, I never know what to say when I get letters from people who have really been screwed by the people who have destroyed this economy. You know, really have destroyed it. And a lot of people just cruise along on this like it doesn't mean anything. Like, well, it hasn't touched them. You know, they're bulletproof where it concerns these horrendous long-term recessions. I guess. I don't know. But I run into them. Some of them I know, you know, on a fairly personal level. And they don't know what all the crying and bitching and screaming and bleating and getting all upset is about. And then you get a letter from somebody like Dan, and it really drives it home. I mean, that's how we, Kathy and I, started our own thing. The company we were working for went bankrupt. The company before that we were working for went bankrupt. The company that we were working for before that went out of business. And the company we were working for before that fired me. So, anyway, Bill, thanks for writing. Hang in there, pal. Max Richtman. I never heard of him. You haven't either. He is the executive vice president and acting CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security. No, that's really the title of the organization, and it's really there to preserve Social Security. It is sort of the watchdog organization that makes sure that Social Security is viable, fluid, and working properly. He issued a statement today. Quote, "It's important that Americans understand that the just-released 2011 Trustees Report confirms that Social Security and Medicare continue to fulfill their mission, providing retirement and health security to millions still suffering during the worst economic crisis of a generation. Beyond the doom and gloom news headlines and calls to cut these programs, Social Security and Medicare, in order to, quote, save them, end quote, the fiscal facts in this annual report show that Social Security has a $2.6 trillion surplus, which continues to grow. While health care reform has extended the solvency of the Medicare Trust Fund, the economic recession and high health care costs continue to take their toll. The bottom line is Social Security is not in crisis. And further reforms to our health care system are necessary to bring down costs nationwide, not just in Medicare." End quote. Now, I think it's very important that that be heard. Maybe it'll be in tomorrow's paper. I didn't see it today. The Social Security Trust Fund has a $2.6 trillion surplus and continues to grow. The bottom line, Mr. Richman says, Social Security is not in crisis. Not. So, the stories that the Republicans told last election cycle, last fall to get elected, were exactly what Paul Krugman has identified them. And I think, as we talked about on this program back then also, lies. Filthy Republican lies. That's all they were. Matter of fact, Krugman recently wrote about what happened this past Tuesday. This got right by me. I didn't see this. I don't know how I missed it. But last Tuesday, 42 freshman members, Republican members of Congress, sent a letter to President Obama urging him to order Democrats to stop from engaging in what the Republicans call Medi-Scare tactics. Yeah. The Republicans, in other words, they want Democrats to stop saying that the Republican budget plan released early last month, which would end Medicare as we know it. I mean, it's designed to end Medicare as we know it. And the Republicans want the Democrats to stop saying it's a plan to end Medicare as we know it. Do you understand that? Republicans are really vile. They're just useless as teats on a bull. You know what I'm saying? Absolutely. Now, as Krugman points out, you probably recall the people who signed that letter got their current jobs by engaging in the very tactics that they're now asking Democrats to stop. It's amazing. It's just amazing. You know, Democrats are saying what Democrats are saying now is absolutely true. Republicans are trying to end it. Republicans last year, what they were saying was completely false. Remember, death panels. Woo!
conservatives, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. So, these Republican crybabies, you know, it every single day they prove what I've been saying about these rat bastards for so long. They are first and foremost cowards. They are secondly liars. Third, hypocrites. Liars, cowards, hypocrites. Liars, cowards, or no, cowards, liar. That's good enough. Every single Republican office holder is thus identified, and anyone who votes for them probably has one or at least or two or at least one of those characteristics, or the voter wouldn't vote for these swine. But anyway, so here they were, 42 freshman Republican members of Congress, whining to Obama, make them stop, Mr. President. Make the Democrats stop telling the truth. Oh, make them stop. They said they wanted to wipe the slate clean. Their words. We want to wipe the slate clean. Oh, my God. Representative Alan Kinzinger, a freshman from Illinois who led the news conference calling on Democrats to stop telling the truth, said, quote, I'm not going to defend anything in the past. Let's get past the past. Representative Nan Hayworth of New York, Republican, said it was time to have a civilized conversation. And we're standing ready to work with the president. Oh, my God. Oh, the Republicans kept calling for, we want a fact-based conversation. And they criticized Democrats for filling town hall-style meetings with political operatives. And citizens who complained about the Republican proposal to turn Medicare into, well, destroy it and replace it with vouchers. Stop telling the truth! Oh, you bastards, you're telling the truth on us! The letter further begs Obama to condemn the disingenuous attacks and work with this Congress to reform the programs! I'll tell you what, if, you know, I would be a member of Congress, well, I don't know, maybe I could get away with it, but if I were a member of the House in this freshman class, I would walk up to these people and one at a time, just, I would get a wet towel, like out of the House of Representatives steam room, wet towel. And I would go up to each one of these Republicans and run up real quick and pull their pants down and snap them on the ass with the wet towel. Ba-bam, 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 ba-bam. Even the women. Ba-bam! Towel snap them. Oh, God, would that be fun. I can see these right-wing rancid little cockroach bloggers. Malloy suggests violently attacking members of the House. Okay, Krugman says the truth is that older Americans really should fear Republican budget ideas, and not just because of that plan to dismantle Medicare. Given the realities of the federal budget, the Republicans insisting that tax increases of any kind are off the table, which they have, is by definition a party demanding savage cuts in programs that serve older Americans. Why? Here's a quick and dirty summary of what the federal government does. Listen up. It's a giant insurance company, mainly serving older people, that also has an enormous army. Okay? You see, the great bulk of federal spending that isn't either defense-related or interest on the debt goes to Social Security, to Medicare and Medicaid. The first two, Social Security and Medicare, specifically serve seniors by definition, right? Medicaid is often thought of as a poverty program. These days, it's largely about providing nursing care. About two-thirds of its spending now going to the elderly and or the disabled. So if you do the math, seniors accounted one way or another for about half of federal spending. And in case you haven't noticed, there's soon going to be a lot more seniors around because the baby boomers have started reaching retirement age. So if you are over 50, understand something. For Christ's sake, get it through your heads. The Republicans want to dismantle, do away with the two programs that assist people over the age of 60 in this country and people who desperately need help. That's what they're talking about. Nothing more, nothing less. Please understand it. Oh, and by the way, in the last election, older voters who split their vote almost evenly between the parties in 2008, they went overwhelmingly to the Republican Party. Why? Because the Republicans successfully posed as defenders of Medicare. So you can see why these Republican freshmen are nervous, because the truth is coming out now. So they go to Daddy Obama. Make them stop, Dad! I'm telling on you. Dad, make them stop! Make them stop, Dad! Cowardly snots.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. What a bunch of crybaby little bastards, aren't they? Michael Roswell says, still in all, don't you find it passing strange that these pusillanimous repugs are running to Obama to make the mean Democrats stop picking on them? So why isn't Obama telling them that they're a bunch of mama's boys who can dish it out but can't take it? Oh yeah, I forgot. That would be uncivil. Oh yeah, okay, all right. Can you believe these people?
Make them stop.
This hour is sponsored by Bill Bogman. I hope I see you again at the event in Seattle, too, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship, pal.
Make them stop, Mr. President.
And Alice writes regarding... Regarding the report by the CEO, the head trustee of Social Security has said, we're fine. Social Security is fine. It's growing. What did I say? $2.1 trillion? Alice writes,
but, Mike, I heard on the radio AP News today that Social Security is going to run out a year earlier than originally predicted because of the lousy economy and unemployment. Here's the AP report.
Washington, the bad economy is worsening the already shaky finances of Medicare and Social Security, draining the trust funds, supporting them faster than expected, and intensifying the need for Congress to shore up the massive benefit programs, the government said Friday. Both Medicare and Social Security are being hit by a double whammy, the long-anticipated wave of retiring baby boomers and weaker-than-expected tax receipts.
Weaker than expected?
According to the annual report by the trustees who oversee the programs.
Wait a second. Don't tell me that the Associated Press is lying. They must be, because I've got Max Rickman and Pamela Tainter Causey. Rickman is Executive Vice President, Acting CEO of the National Committee to Preserve Social Security. Pamela Causey is communications director for the group. Quote, it is important that Americans understand the just released 2011 trustees report confirms that Social Security and Medicare continue to fulfill their mission, providing retirement and health security to millions still suffering during the worst economic crisis of a generation. Blah, 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 blah. The fiscal facts in this annual report show that Social Security has a $2.6 trillion surplus, which continues to grow. The bottom line is Social Security is not in crisis. And further reforms to our healthcare system are necessary to bring down costs nationwide, not just in Medicare. Now, that's a report from the trustee. Associated Press says, according to the annual report, the trustees who oversee the program say... Say what? The bad economy is worsening the already shaky finances of Medicare and Social Security. Now, Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky jumped up and said, quote, there can no longer be any doubt or denial. Our nation's Medicare and Social Security programs are unsustainable and will run out of money sooner than expected. Who are you going to be? Believe. Thanks, Alice. Who are you going to believe? Are you going to believe somebody writing for the Associated Press and then Mitch McConnell? Mitch McConnell stepping out in front of a microphone and saying, or are you going to believe the CEO of the organization that oversees the fund? I know who I'll believe. Sheila in Oklahoma sent me a note from the vast wasteland of bat guano crazy James Inhofe. Sent me a video, but there's some text that goes with it here. It's from Talking Points Memo. this is about the prisoners that this country are holding. The prisoners this country is holding in detention in Guantanamo and wherever else we've got them stashed. Don't think for a minute this is just going on in Guantanamo. This is just what media chooses to focus on. I think the only people who really know where and how many are being held in detention as a result of George W. Bush's phony war on terror, those numbers are probably only known to the highest echelons of the CIA and some of the other spook agencies that have successfully destroyed respect for this country globally. Anyway, as Talking Points Memo says, it's not that they're in prison indefinitely. It's not that they've maybe been waterboarded or tortured. It's definitely not that they can't see their families. No, the biggest problem facing Guantanamo Bay detainees, according to Senator Jim Inhofe, is that they're getting fat. No, seriously. Inhofe was on Fox and Friends this morning, and that greasy little bastard Brian Kilmeade, the host, asked him whether he thinks the U.S. should allow detainees to get visits from their families, a program that the International Committee of the Red Cross has been pushing the Pentagon to put into place. And Inhofe said, no, we shouldn't, Brian. Let's keep in mind, these detainees, they have things they've never had before. You know what the biggest problem in Gitmo is right now? It's obesity. They're eating better than they've ever eaten before. They have better medical care. They have legal counsel. You gotta draw the line somewhere. Let's draw it here. Son of a bitch. Tell you what, let's put Brian Kilmeade in Guantanamo. And no, I don't want to. He shouldn't be waterboarded. He should be subjected to controlled drowning. Waterboard. You know, every time I hear that term, I see those young kids at the beach. And they have the skimmer boards, you know, the boogie boards, and they throw them down the beach in that little bit of water after the wave goes out. And then they run and jump and go. No, let's put Brian Kilmeade in Guantanamo. Let's put Inhofe. Let's put him down there. Tell you what, just for a week, and give them the standard treatment that the people we are holding in limbo, some of them now, I said limbo, not Limbaugh, some of them now for as much as 7, 8, 9 years. And Brian Kilmeade and Jim Inhofe are saying, no, they don't need visits from their families. You know, they're just, Inhofe says, you know, the big problem is they're overweight. Bastards. Bastards. Did you hear what happened in Connecticut? Now, whether or not you agree with what the State Employees Union agreed to today, consider the difference that this Democratic governor named Malloy, Dan Malloy, consider the difference between this Democratic governor and the Republican freak in Wisconsin, Scott Walker. Both states are facing big shortfalls, budget shortfalls. So here's what happened. With the threat of nearly 5,000 layoffs hanging over them, representatives for 45,000 unionized state employees agreed today to $1.6 billion in concessions over 2 years to reduce or to produce what Governor Dan Malloy has called a balanced budget with pain for everyone. Record tax increases, substantial program cuts, and worker givebacks in health care, pension benefits, and wages. Malloy announced the agreement after 2 months of negotiations and a budget passed last week that assumed concessions before they were actually accepted by the unions. But Malloy said the deal would save taxpayers $21.5 billion over 20 years through structural changes in worker benefits and compensation. Now, Malloy, of course, is a governor, or is a Democrat. He won election in November with strong union support. And he's managed to carve out a national niche. I hate it when the New York Times uses tricky words like that. A national niche is a politician seeking a different approach to state governance, different from the confrontational stances taken by Chris Christie in New Jersey or Scott Walker in Wisconsin or Rick, whatever his name is, in Florida, or that, or the Stalinist in Michigan. No, this guy sat down. Well, I'll tell you about it when we come back. But yeah, let me just tell you when we come back. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
A traveler on an airline had his name on a secret list. He was taking away. With his laptop and as he left, he called out to me. I'm in the Guantanamo. I heard the girls are sweeter there. I'm in the
speakers. It'll be our secret.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Bill Bachman. Thanks, Bill. Well, if you were listening on Ustream, we just lost everything. Good God in heaven. All right, where was I? Oh, yeah. The governor of Connecticut, Dan Malloy, reached an agreement with unions, and the public unions there agreed to $1.6 billion in concessions over 2 years. They just came to this agreement today. And these concessions come along with tax increases for the citizens of that state, program cuts, worker givebacks, and health care, pension benefits, and wages, all in an attempt to get back in balance after the horrific damage caused by 8 years of Bush-Cheney and their goddamn wars and their unfunded this and their unfunded that and their tax breaks to the wealthy. Everybody is in dire straits because of those filthy Republicans. Bush and Cheney and what the cockroaches in the Republican Party did to this country. So everybody is scrambling. Now, the difference between Dan Malloy and Scott Walker or these Republican freaks who like John Kasich, what a scum sucker he is. The difference is Malloy sat down. Well, he said it's an historic agreement because of the way we achieved it. We respected the collective bargaining process and we respected each other. We negotiated in good faith without fireworks and without anger. And he called the deal, quote, the most significant agreement with state employees in Connecticut history. The agreement includes a provision that no unionized employees will be laid off for 4 years. And a 2-year freeze on wages for all employees and managers. Now, Malloy said he will continue to reduce the size of government through attrition and the elimination of managers' positions. But the working class in Connecticut that work for the state, that work in public, well, they don't work for the state, they work for the people that work in these public sector jobs. Everybody sat down and faced the reality, not like this disgusting little bastard Scott Walker in Wisconsin. And you know, what does he do? He comes in, he gives huge tax breaks to his friends, and those tax breaks just about equal the amount that the state goes in debt. So then he decides to destroy public unions. Scott Walker should have been, you know, with the wet towel. Somebody should have taken him out. Outside the state house, taking his pants off, gotten a wet towel, and just give him some ass snaps. You know, maybe 15 or 20 ass snaps, and Scott Walker might have realized that he better change his tactics. You think? I think ass snaps are pretty good. The concessions that everybody agreed to and the tax increases that the legislature agreed to impose, everything taken together, it still fell $400 million short of the $2 billion that Malloy had sought. So the difference will be made up with additional spending cuts and an increase in existing revenues that gave the governor a cushion in bargaining. So Republican leaders, sure, here they come. The Republican cockroaches and termites who infest every state legislature. Some of them they own outright and they're destroying them. But the Republican cockroaches in Connecticut said it was impossible to evaluate the package fully without more specifics. Well, we don't know. But the Republicans said the amicable dealings between a Democratic governor and unions who helped elect him were not necessarily a good sign. Right. The House Republican leader, Larry Caffaro, said, quote, a lot of people have asked, where's the outrage? The kind of outrage you saw in Wisconsin around the country where various governors, you know, Republican governors have wanted to make changes. Where's the outrage? Somebody ought to tell this cockroach freak that the outrage comes when a Republican governor starts treating citizens of the state that he is elected to govern like they're bums. This governor, Dan Malloy, didn't do that. He sat down with everybody and said, look, let's work this out. And work it out they did. But the Republicans don't understand that. That's why this stupid little craphead, Larry Caffaro, whatever the hell, the House Republican leader in Connecticut, he's wandering around going, oh, well, where's the outrage? How come you union bums agreed to all this? How come you union bums didn't agree to it in Wisconsin? Huh? 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 Nobody can explain compromise and deal making and solutions that are arrived at through negotiations to these cockroaches, they're not into that. They don't understand the concept. They're not into reconciling differences. They're not into that. That's why this program, my program, is so verbally violent. That's why I get so outraged. I never used to do talk radio like this, but I have watched over the past 10 years, ever since the Bush crime family came to power, how so many Democrats, so many liberals just rolled back on their asses and put up with it. Oh, well, we don't want to say anything. I watched the Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate, sometimes in the majority, sometimes not, act like a bunch of crybaby little whiny asses. They had a war criminal in the White House, and they wouldn't do anything about it. Now, Republicans don't understand the art of compromise, the art of negotiation, the art of reconciliation. They don't understand it. So my attitude, just keep kicking them right in the groin. We'll be right back.
If you're
sponsored by Joe from Ohio, who says, keep it up, Malloy. No, not really. This hour is sponsored by Tim from L.A., also known as the Canadian wannabe of the Malloy chat room and Skype group. And this is their message. On behalf of all the truthers in the Mike Malloy and Skype chats, thank you. You're welcome to stop into Skype with us anytime, as this is our sixth hour. You know the group chant. Ow! They're easy to punk. Got you guys, didn't I? Anyway, thanks to what Tim from L.A. and the rest of these hell socialists are talking about is the Ustream. Log on to Ustream, and if you can, you know, if you can pass muster, they'll let you post there. You got to be able to carry on a conversation, though. You can't be some jingoistic little punk Republican. So, that's what this is all about. So, the Malloy chat room and Skype group are sponsoring this hour. Thanks, everybody. That's very kind. I appreciate it. You better sit down for this one. Oh, you already are. That's right. You're sitting down. It's 10 o'clock here in the East. People are not standing up, Mike. That's true. This was on the front page of the business section of the New York Times today. It wasn't on the news. Any news, anywhere. Wasn't on the front page of the Times or the Post or the LA Times or the Seattle newspaper or Miami or Houston, no place. Despite repeated assurances that American nuclear plants are better equipped to deal with natural disasters than their counterparts in Japan. Nuclear regulators said Thursday that recent inspections of U.S. nuclear plants have found serious problems with emergency equipment that would have made that equipment unusable in an accident. Hear that? In addition, the staff of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission acknowledged that that agency's current regulations and disaster plans do not give enough consideration to two factors that have greatly contributed to the continuing, ongoing Fukushima Daiichi crisis in Japan. Those two considerations, or those two factors, are simultaneous problems at more than one reactor and a natural disaster that disrupts roads, electricity, and other infrastructure surrounding a plant. Nobody in this country is paying attention to that. Oh, there's more. It's worse. The briefing was part of a review requested by the commissioners to evaluate the vulnerability of America's reactors to severe natural disasters like the ones that hit the Japanese plant in March. The deputy executive director of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission told the five commissioners that inspectors checked a sample of equipment at all 104 reactors in the United States and found problems at a third of them. What is that? 35 nuclear reactors. 35. 35 problems. You don't have, unless you are up for suicide, you don't have problems at a nuclear reactor. The problems included pumps that would not start, or if they did not put out the required amount of water. Equipment that was supposed to be set aside for emergencies was being used in other parts of the plants. Emergency equipment that would be needed in case of flood, stored in places that would be flooded. And insufficient diesel fuel on hand to run backup systems. See, if the electricity goes out and the cooling systems fail, the only thing that can be used, well, the thing required, are diesel generators. And the ones on hand did not have fuel to run them. Officials said the problems that had been found were addressed immediately, but not everything had been inspected. And the deputy executive director of the agency said he expected to have a fuller picture soon. We're going to have a fuller picture here pretty soon. Do you know what this means? Well, of course you do. The private corporations, like Entergy is one of them, the private corporations in this country, this is why Malloy Socialism calls, Mike Malloy, not the Dan Malloy, the governor of Connecticut, this is why Malloy Socialism calls for the public ownership of all energy production. Oil, gas, nuclear, wind, solar, whatever it is. The private companies that run these nuclear reactors are not there to provide electricity for Americans. They are there to provide a profit for their shareholders. Period. If providing the profit includes shortcuts regarding safety, the environment, whatever. Okay. All right. We don't have any diesel fuel on hand. Okay. Well, that, you know, that crap costs money, right? What, our equipment's broken? Oh, well, you know, it costs money to replace it. They are not there to provide you electric service. They are there to make a profit for their shareholders. Will you please keep that in mind? They're like any capitalist organization. Their sole purpose for existing is profit. That's it. What is so hard about that? What is so confusing about that? Why does that get lost in all these dumbass debates about, well, capitalism is the best thing in the world? It is? Look at the result of it. Look at the result of pure cap. You want pure cap? You want pure free market capitalism? You'll have to go back about 5,000 years, back when people would bring their baskets and their fish and their grain and gather in a market square, and people would show up to trade seashells and trinkets for fish or little chips of silver. That's free market. That's not what we have. We have a poisonous, destructive system of capitalism that says, where it concerns nuclear reactors, they're just like anything else, like a goddamn gas station, you know. We're in business to show a profit. What? We don't have diesel fuel to run the backup generators in case we have a disaster? Well, that's why I have the helicopter up on top of the building. My ass is gone if that happens. You people deal with it. Har, har, har. Capitalism. The two-hour briefing given to the five-member Nuclear Regulatory Commission was an early assessment, 30 days into a 90-day review being conducted by an NRC task force. The staff member leading the effort said the staff was considering, quote, enhancements, end quote, to its disaster plans and procedures. Enhancements. You know what that means? That means what they have right now has fallen apart. There are no disaster plans. Oh, they're written down in the manual, but the equipment and the fuel and the objects needed to make the plans work aren't there.
Your nightly ammunition against right-wing rhetoric. Get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. When we come back from the next break, we're going to do podcast trivia and give away a one-year subscription to podcast downloads of the Malloy program, commercial free and all yours, with a retail value of $59.60. And when you divide the number of shows we do in a year into that number, it comes out to 25 cents a program. That's why we call this 2-bit radio. Now, back to this issue that was on the front page of the business section of the New York Times today. And I love the headline, Disaster Plan Problems Found at U.S. Nuclear Plants. That's like saying shirt sales at Macy's tomorrow morning. Disaster Plan Problems Found at U.S. Nuclear Plants. Uh-huh. So, all sorts of problems, and at least a third of the plants tested so far had problems like emergency backup generating systems that had no fuel, no plans made for multiple disasters, like, say, a flood and an earthquake, or a hurricane and a flood, or, you know, just nothing. No plan in case roads and bridges and power systems were destroyed in the vicinity of one of these plants so that relief workers could not get there. I mean, nothing, because the companies that run them don't care. They are there to make a profit. They are not there to provide energy to America's citizens least of all, safe energy. Just like insurance companies, they're not there. Health insurance companies, they're not there to handle your bills and take care of you and relieve the stress when you get sick. That's not why they're there. Are you kidding me? They are there in a capitalist system to make a profit. Period. Same thing applies to nuclear power stations. Profit. The staff member leading the effort said the staff was considering enhancements to its disaster plan and procedures. But as laid out by the staff, the Times says, some of the changes under consideration could be far-reaching. Yeah, you know why far-reaching? Because there's nothing there now.
Oh, these are safe.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, they're safe.
For example, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission now looks at how well a plant's design can handle a problem at just one reactor, even if there is more than one reactor at the site. Yeah.
Hey, have you got that nailed down over there? I realize you have three reactors over there. Oh, no, you folks have five. Wait a minute. Let me see here. You opened up two more. Okay, you got five reactors. What's your emergency plan?
Oh, it covers one. What if three of them go down?
Figuratively speaking, God forbid they should go down.
And by the way, did you know that it turns out now that the Fukushima plant, the Daiichi plant, had a nuclear meltdown? There is a nuclear core outside the containment vessel. Did you know that? Where is that? Where is that? Here it is. Engineers from Tokyo Electric Power, TEPCO, entered the number one reactor at the end of last week for the first time and saw the top 5 feet or so of the core's 13-foot-long fuel rods had been exposed to the air and melted down. One of the reactors at the Fukushima Daiichi power plant did suffer a nuclear meltdown, Japanese officials admitted for the first time today, describing a pool of molten fuel at the bottom of the reactor's containment vessel. Now the company is worried that the molten pool of radioactive fuel may have burned a hole through the bottom of the containment vessel, causing water to leak. Junichi Matsumoto, spokesman for TEPCO, said, quote, "We will have to revise our plans. We cannot deny the possibility that a hole in the pressure vessel caused water to leak." The pressure vessel, isn't that the containment for the nuclear, the ball of pure hell that is the core of a nuclear reactor? And now it's loose in the Japanese environment. Well, let me rephrase that. Now it's loose in the global environment. There is no such thing as a local nuclear disaster. Mr. Matsumoto said, "We will have to revise our plans." Greenpeace said the situation could escalate rapidly if the lava, the fluid in there, melts through the vessel. And what's to stop it? Greenpeace said significant amounts of radioactive material had been released into the sea and that samples of seaweed taken from as far as 40 miles from the Fukushima plant had been found to contain radiation well above legal limits. Of the 22 samples tested, 10 were contaminated with 5 times the legal limit of iodine-131 and 20 times of cesium-137. We'll be right back. Trivia when we come back. You want to play? 877-996-2556. Hurry, hurry. 25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Tim from L.A., also known as the Canadian wannabe of the Molloy Chat Room and Skype group. If you don't know what that is, it's at Ustream.com. And these folks get together and play every night while we're on the air. And the message, Mike, on behalf of all the truthers in the Mike Molloy and Skype chats, thank you. You are welcome to stop into Skype with us anytime, as this is our sixth hour that they've sponsored. You know the group chant. Ow! Jesus, that's not fair. Hey, listen, for a sponsorship, I'll do it. All right, I think it is time to play some podcast trivia. So, band leader, if you have the music ready. Ah, there it is. Ow. This time, once again, ladies and gentlemen, for podcast trivia, where you can win a one-year subscription of commercial-free Molloy Show podcast downloads. Sent to your email every morning. Well, okay, most mornings. Okay, we miss a few, all right? You know, sometimes there's a foul-up, so to speak, but we always make it up to you. All you have to do to win one is to get the right answer to our trivia question. Let us pick a lucky contestant. If we can stop the damn music, for there we go. Tim is in Connecticut. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
It's all right. I had no idea it was related to your governor.
Yeah, I actually on the state sign on my the state line from Danell. Danell. Danell.
Yeah, I think it is. Isn't it Danell Molloy? M-A-L-L-O-Y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm not related to him. All right. Are you ready?
Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
Hey, okay, before we start.
Yeah.
I just want to say I've been away from your show. I was talking to Kathy. I usually listen to Alan Combs just for all the stupid right-wing callers that call into his show.
Yeah.
But actually, I think your show is better. You're a better host, and I really enjoy it when you, take on the right-wing callers and tell them to get off my line and stuff. That's funny.
All right, Tim. Listen, this program has always been open to right-wingers if they could put together a sentence and you know, just try to engage in a rational conversation, but I have yet to find one in over 20 years of doing talk radio. So, yeah, so I just don't bother with them. All right, are you ready?
Okay.
All right.
Okay, let's go, Sean.
Here we go. Music maestro. Ah, there it is, the scary music. All right, listen up, Tim. This week, the Senate Ethics Panel released its report on Senator John Ensign. It showed the workings of a corrupt senator, so corrupt that had he not resigned just ahead of the report's release, he would have been kicked out, the first senator in 150 years to be removed by expulsion. Okay, another senator was found in the same report to have been involved in the cover-up of Ensign's illegal activity. Was that second senator A, Orrin Hatch, B, Lindsey Graham, C, Tom Coburn, or D, James Inhofe?
I've been paying attention closely to the news. Is it Inhofe?
No, Tim. No, it's not. It should have been. It should have been, but it's not. All right, Tim, thanks. Let me move on because I've got to get rid of this damn freebie here. Who's next in the barrel? Oh, yes. R.B. Ham driving in Manitoba. Let's see, where is that? That's in Mexico, right?
No, a little bit further north there, Mike.
Okay. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
Okay. As I said, this week the Senate Ethics Committee panel here in the United States released a report on Senator Ensign. It showed nothing but corruption. There was another senator found in the same report to have been involved in the cover-up. What was that second senator's name? Was it A, Orrin Hatch, B, Lindsey Graham, C, Tom Coburn, or D, James Inhofe?
Orrin Hatch.
No!
What's the matter with you people in Canada? Don't you pay attention to what's going on here in the United States?
All right, RB, I'm sorry. Oh, my God, I thought this would be easy. Kathy, easy. Do you want to tell RB that I have to move on? I have to move on, RB, because, you know. Michael! In New Orleans.
Yes.
All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay, Michael, here we go. Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Was the second senator?
M-I-C. C for
was this
Coburn.
Tom Coburn. All right, you got it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah, he's the one that made a state law that provided the death penalty for abortionists.
Yeah, yeah. Just one hell
and
of a guy.
And he's a physician himself, yeah.
Yeah, not only that, he's one of these real declarative Christians who, if you don't believe his form of Christianity and you claim to be a Christian and you don't believe his specific brand, why, you're going to hell. So, anyway. All right, Michael. Now, you wanted to make a comment regarding Bin Laden, right?
Oh yeah,
okay.
I usually think ahead like this, but for once, that strident afternoon host Randy Rhodes, you referred to her as strident when you were at Air America.
I did.
Talk about the pot calling the kettle.
Yeah, really.
Strident. But anyway,
I said that.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Anyway, on Monday she said, "Well, of course, the Pakistanis were holding him under house arrest, just like AQ Khan."
Yeah.
But secretly, of course.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, that's what they do with people that they don't want. I mean, they kept him in those two rooms for 5 or 6 years.
Well,
and he wasn't allowed to have the internet or the phone lines because he would have been sending out instructions to his terror network.
Well, you got to wonder then why the Pakistanis didn't intercept his couriers who would send out whatever messages that. It appears that were sent out. I still
they were posing as people shopping for 18 people.
Was that what it was? Yeah,
I think so.
They were going to the local Walmart just to pick up a few odds and ends.
Oh, can I just make one other comment?
You should certainly may. Sure.
I'm a radio professional that retired a number of years, but I listen to you on streaming from KKGN, Green 960, San Francisco, and this is a station that I think has solved what I can call the problem of the talk radio clock. And that problem is only 38 minutes of talk per hour and with the host, and the rest of the time, most stations play repetitive PSAs or PIs, you know what I mean by PIs.
Right.
And those are things they play ad infinitum, hoping that on the 100th time that you hear about carbonite, you'll change your mind and decide to buy it. Anyway. But the station gets nothing unless somebody buys something.
Yeah, you got to call the number.
So they repeat it ad infinitum. But anyway, KKGN, Green 960, plays excerpts from other host shows for up to 3 or 4 minutes.
Which is a super idea.
It is great.
And as you know, it's very simple cross-promotion.
It's wonderful, and the other hosts have a lot of great things to say, and they have people just, culling your show and other people's shows every day
It is.
KKGN is a great way to stream.
It is. And it is a radio station in San Francisco, which speaks volumes.
Right, exactly.
So, we are very grateful to be carried on that station, the station in Seattle, the station in L.A., when we're not preempted by, teenage girl hockey, it's always the championships, though. So, all right, Michael, thank you very much. I'm going to put you on hold. Do not hang up, please. I'm going to put you on hold. Kathy will get the pertinent information. And Michael in New Orleans is our podcast trivia winner for this week. Where were we? What was I screaming about before we took a break to do something rational? Oh yeah, the report of the condition at U.S. nuclear plants in the United States. Well, if they're U.S. nuclear plants, of course they're in the United States. And the report is not good. This is an interim report, 30 days into a 90-day assessment, a review, that was ordered up as a result of the disaster brought to the Japanese people by TEPCO. Now, a lot of people say, well, Malloy, that's not fair. It was a tidal wave and an earthquake, or a tsunami and an earthquake. Okay, but it was owned by TEPCO, and one would assume that if you are going to shake hands with hell, which is what you must do when you work with nuclear reactors, that you would make sure, and I mean 100% sure, that if there is a tsunami or an earthquake or a hurricane or a tornado or whatever the hell it is, that you are not going to put 150 million people's lives in distress. Before the hour, this hour has been sponsored by Tim from L.A. He has indeed, also known as the Canadian Wannabe, on behalf of or of the Malloy chat room and Skype group. And his message, Mike, on behalf of all the truthers in the Mike Malloy and Skype chats, thank you. You are welcome to stop and to Skype with us anytime. Skype with us. I'm afraid I'll get bruises. As this is our sixth time sponsoring you, you know the group chant. Ow! Thanks, Tim, and thanks to everybody in the Ustream Skype chat thingy. But back to the darkness that is usually this program. First of all, Prairie 2 has a little explanation for us here. The lava, there was reference made in this dispatch from Tokyo, from TEPCO, that there is something referred to as lava. If the lava melts through the vessel, this nuclear or this radioactive goop, this fuel leaking, Prairie 2 writes, the lava, quote, quote, previously known as fuel rods, is extremely dense and will burn through concrete or anything else while always moving downward. Must have something to do with gravity, huh? The additional 100 tons of this material in the cooling pool at the top of each reactor building, 100 tons? Has the potential of joining this core material as the building is digested out from under it. Jesus. One of the reactor buildings is already starting to lean and could collapse if they aren't able to stabilize it. Aftershocks from a 9.0 earthquake continue for 10 to 20 years, adding to the problem. You know, nobody is focusing that much on Fukushima or the Daiichi plant. And the situation, it doesn't make any difference what is being reported in media. The situation is getting worse. I mean, at what point? I don't know if I should even ask the question. At what point do the Japanese islands become uninhabitable? At what point does this radiation start to drift? They're not that far from the Korean Peninsula. They're not that far from the Taiwan, from the Chinese mainland, from Kamchatka Peninsula of Russia, Siberia. What? Okay, let's not talk about it. Back in this country, it is discovered by a task force checking out the 104 nuclear reactors in this country. How are things? Well, so far they have found problems at a third of them. And I like how it's reported by Matthew Wald in the New York Times. They checked a sample of equipment, all 104 reactors, and found problems at less than a third of them. That's how the time, less than a third of them. Oh, well, it's less than 35, huh? Oh, well, that's good. What is it, 30? 29? 20? Problems. The biggest problems are equipment that was supposed to be set aside for emergencies. It was being used in other parts of the plants. Pumps that would not start, pumps necessary in case the containment pools start to lose water. The pumps, I guess, are supposed to pump more in. They didn't work, or if they did, they didn't put out the required amount of water and needed to cover up those fuel rods. Emergency equipment that would be needed in case of flood, stored in places that would be flooded. Not enough diesel fuel on hand to run backup systems. Jesus Christ, you realize what they're talking about here? And it's just so casual, isn't it? This is on in the business section of the New York Times, and there's a reason for it. Like I said, nuclear reactors are capitalists at work. They are not there to provide you and me energy, electricity, or anything. They are there to provide their shareholders a profit. If that means effed up equipment in these disasters waiting to happen, so be it! And who does anything about it? One of the task force managers said, you have to take a step back and consider what would happen if you had multiple units affected by some beyond design basis event. Don't you love the terminology? Beyond design basis. That means something that they are not prepared to handle. What if you had multiple units affected by some beyond design basis event? The question was asked by Charlie Miller, the staff member leading this investigation. Another problem that staff members acknowledge is that they have never paid much attention to the issues posed, by handling an emergency when there's widespread damage to surrounding roads, power systems, and communications links. In the past, the commission has explicitly rejected the notion that it should consider such combined events when reviewing a plant safety preparations. Yeah, let's just make sure that there's a diesel fuel. Let's not pay attention to anything else. Oh, I know. Let's make sure that the power grid will stay up. Let's not pay attention about an earthquake happening at the same time. I mean, this is madness. And there's more to this. Stick around. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. We're going to get back to this Nuclear Regulatory Commission story momentarily. This hour is sponsored by Irish Dave. Irish Dave. And his message, well, he wants to spread a simple message. Work for the revolution. Well, there you go. Irish Dave. The simple message, work for the revolution. Thanks for the sponsorship, Irish. It is 7 past the hour. During the break, I got an email here from Sanchez. It more or less says, why don't we hear anything about the radiation particles that were turning up in American milk samples? The latest reports are from April. What about now? And Sanchez adds, how soon before we don't need a refrigerator light to find a bottle of milk? Now that's sick. Oh, my God. That's funny. I don't know why it's funny. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the United States has a 90-day review being conducted by a task force to find out the condition of American nuclear reactors. Insofar as it concerns the actual condition of these reactors, some of them are way beyond their lifespan, and whether or not the operators of these nuclear facilities have in place the emergency equipment necessary were there to be some sort of a problem. And like I said earlier, you don't run a nuclear reactor and have a problem. There is no such thing as a small problem at a nuclear reactor, and the big problems will do terrible, terrible things, and will do those terrible things for thousands of years. So when you reach into hell and grasp the devil's hand because you think you're about to be given a pot of gold, you better be careful who has the better footing. This is exactly what the nuclear industry has done in this country. The nuclear industry does not give a goddamn about whether or not you have cheap electricity. You do not. What they do care about is the return on their investment to their investors. They do not care about safety, nor do they care about the production of electricity, no more than health insurance companies care about healthy Americans or taking care of the debts that healthy Americans incur when they need health care. That's not why they're in business. The capitalist system is not there to make your life easy on any level. It is there to return a profit to the investors. There's not a Republican on earth who gets that through his goddamn head. Unless, of course, he's in that top 0.1% that is sucking this country and this planet dry because of his or her greed. So, all sorts of problems being discovered by this task force assigned by the NRC. And don't let the term Nuclear Regulatory Commission fool you. They're about as regulatory where it concerns nuclear production as I am about the corner gas station. They do what the nuclear industry tells them to do. The only reason this review is occurring is because of what happened in Japan. And to show you the importance that the American corporate establishment places on this review, it is found, this story I'm quoting, in the New York Times on the front page of the business section. Because this is not about health and safety and the environment. It is about business. Do you get that? Another problem that staff members acknowledged, like I mentioned last hour, is that they have never paid much attention to the issues posed by handling an emergency where there is widespread damage to surrounding roads, power systems, and communications links. In the past, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has explicitly rejected the notion that it should even consider such combined events when reviewing a plant's safety preparations. Don't bother us with that. Just tell us, do you have flashlights handy in case the power goes out? The article goes on. Simultaneous with the commission's meetings, Representative Edward Markey, a Massachusetts Democrat, released a report arguing that a variety of other shortcomings exist at nuclear plants, including the frequent failure of emergency diesel generators. So not only is there no fuel, when there is fuel, some of the generators fail. They don't work. Now, we're not talking about the little generators that you may have tucked around behind your house. You know, the ones that will produce enough power to run your refrigerator for a couple hours. That's not where we're talking about massive generators that do not work. They are essential to plant safety if the power grid goes down. Markey also criticized the NRC for not requiring plants to have a backup power source for spent fuel rods while the reactor is shut for maintenance or refueling. Mr. Markey, Representative Markey, you know as well as I know that the nuclear power plant operators are not there to produce cheap energy. A, it's not cheap, but that's not why they're there. They're not there to produce energy at all. They are there to make a profit. If in the process of making a profit, energy is produced, well, hallelujah! And they are damn sure not there to make sure that the energy produced is safe, or the system used to produce the energy is safe, I guess would be a more correct way to put it, right? The Fukushima accident, according to the Times, has cast new attention on spent fuel pools. Yes, indeed. That's where the corpus delicti goes. That's where the chunks of death reside for a very long time after they have been used to produce after they have been used to produce profit for the investors. The chunks of death sit in radiation pools and sit and sit. The reason the United States government recommended that Americans stay 50 miles away from the plant in Japan was damage to the spent fuel pool of Fukushima's Unit 4, a reactor that was shut down before the March 11th earthquake and tsunami. Representative Markey pointed out that in the last eight years, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has received 69 reports of inoperable diesel generators at 33 nuclear plants, with six of those generators out for more than a month. The diesels provide power for water pumps that allow removal of what is called decay heat. That's the heat generated by the nuclear fuel, even after a reactor shuts down. Just because a reactor shuts down doesn't mean that all of a sudden the nuclear reaction going on inside this material says to itself, oh, well, they've shut down the plant. Well, let's stop nuclear radiating. Okay, everybody now, 1, 2, 3, click.
coast to coast, The Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. So this report in the Times today, disaster plan problems found at U.S. nuclear plants. We have three nuclear reactors in the state of Georgia, two or three. A couple up in Tennessee, not too far from here, because of the Tennessee Valley Authority. A couple over in Alabama. I think there's a couple in South Carolina. The United States is due, in a sense, for a major nuclear tragedy. And it's not because of some cosmic calculus or anything beyond the reality of math and science. So many of the reactors, the nuclear plants, are themselves aging. Some of them are beyond the expiration date. If they existed inside a grocery store, they would have been thrown out a long time ago. But the nuclear industry has the Nuclear Regulatory Commission by the testicles, like so many industries in this perverted capitalist system of ours. The industry itself takes over eventually. It's like cancer. It just takes over the organ that it's near or metastasizes toward. And that's the way industry works with the regulatory agencies in this country. So something called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has zero to do with regulations in the sense that would guarantee safety to the country regarding these reactors. Backup systems are non-existent, or if they are there, they don't work. Generators have either been cannibalized to the point where parts are missing, or they don't have fuel to run them. There are no emergency evacuation plans in case there is damage beyond the periphery of these places where people cannot get in or get out. It just goes on and on and on. Representative Ed Markey pointed out in the last 8 years, the NRC had received almost 70 reports of inoperable diesel generators. The diesel provides power for water pumps that allow removal of so-called decay heat, the heat that fuel generates even after a reactor shuts down. The Fukushima plant shut down successfully, but decay heat wrecked their cores. And now one of those cores in one of those reactors is about to escape its containment vessel. And when that happens, that's it. That's what the movie China Syndrome was about. That's what almost happened at Three Mile Island. That's what almost happened at, what was the one in the Ukraine? Chernobyl. Now, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission said it is aware of these reports that have accumulated over the past 8 years. Oh, we're aware of them. But on Wednesday, attention was called to that problem by the Institute of Nuclear Power Operations, an industry group formed after the Three Mile accident in 1979 to provide peer-to-peer safety reviews. And even that group said one of the few safety measures that was getting worse was the reliability of diesel generators. Peer-to-peer safety review. Peer-to-peer review works in science. It does not work in capitalism. And it's an insult to people for us to believe that an industry reviewing itself will come up with results that are factual, correct, and not geared toward what the capitalist owners of these plants are all about. Profit. They're not about safety. God damn it, they're just not about safety. They're not about generating power insofar as it correlates to safety. They are about profit. Profit. Period. Profit. when you have a power co-op, as we used to have in this country, usually in rural areas, that was a result of the Tennessee Valley Authority, which was something started during the Depression to provide power to the hollers and hills and valleys in Appalachia. And it was run by the federal government. And then you had electric power co-ops where electric power costs about one-tenth of what it costs now, because there was no capitalist organization involved stealing the profit, causing the systems to get to the point of failure because of neglect. And now we have it with the nuclear industry. How does that make you feel, Truth Seeker?
They sentenced me to 20 years of boredom. The system from within. I'm coming now.
Do you know why?
Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Irish Dave is our sponsor this hour. Irish Dave. And his message is pretty simple. Work for the revolution. You can figure out how to do that any way you want. All right, finishing up this piece about the unsafety of our nuclear power system in this country that was on the business front page of the business section of the New York Times, not the front page of the news section. Of course not. The business section, because it's all about business. Finishing up, Representative Markey, a Democrat of Massachusetts, also complained that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has allowed some plant operators to remove equipment that eliminates hydrogen produced by overheating fuel. Remove equipment that eliminates the hydrogen. In addition, now that's very important, because you'll remember the building surrounding Fukushima Unit 4 was destroyed by the explosion of hydrogen that came from the spent fuel pool. Remember that? Markey says that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, which does not regulate the nuclear industry, had allowed some plant operators to remove equipment that eliminates hydrogen produced by overheating fuel. In addition, there is no requirement for equipment to remove hydrogen in the rooms where spent fuel is stored. Jesus God! There is a nuclear disaster heading for this country, and it's not going to be caused by some so-called dirty bomb brought in a suitcase over the border with Mexico! That's not how it's going to happen. There is going to be a nuclear disaster in this country. As surely as the sun rises and the sun also sets, it's going to happen. You know it and I know it. This is a game. The nuclear industry is rolling the dice every single year that they keep these aging plants going. Vermont Yankee, Hanford, the list goes on and on. I guess Hanford is shut down, right? It doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. To a layman, it doesn't matter. this monstrous collection of death is just sitting in 104 nuclear plants around the country. Or is that nuclear reactors? Not sure. And when it happens, of course, the right-wing morons in this country will say it's because Obama is from Kenya. Nuclear Regulatory Commission officials said they were reviewing their previous decision to permit very heavy loading of the spent fuel pools. Thinning those pools would reduce the amount of heat production that had to be dealt with in the case of severe accident, they say. So they are considering, they're reviewing their previous decision to allow these pools to have more spent fuel rods than, I don't know, than the math would dictate. But to capitalism, math only works one way. How much profit can we wring out of this? If it's the meatpacking industry, how many hogs can we crowd into one feces-infested feeding lot? And on and on and on. You know how it goes. And then what did I see this morning? Some anchor person on CNBC and his daughter, his little 11-year-old daughter, wrote a book. Obviously, he wrote it. And the title of it, Your Teacher Said What? And apparently the CNBC anchor bastard has decided that children are not learning enough about predatory capitalism. That it's like the Catholic Church. You have to brainwash, indoctrinate these kids as soon as you get your filthy hands on them. I don't mean your filthy hands. I mean capitalism's filthy hands, just like the Catholic Church's filthy hands. That's what I'm talking about. That's a whole different story. You can look it up. Go to CNBC's website if you want to know what that's all about. So, now, as you know, there was a Senate hearing the other day, only because the Democrats are still in control of the Senate. And it was not a hearing that involved subpoenas. The five CEOs of the five big predatory, death-dealing, pollution-destructive oil companies were requested to attend a hearing in front of the Senate Energy Committee, whatever it was. It really doesn't matter. And so they all showed up. And one of the questions, or one of the things they discussed, was ending, since these predatory bastards among the five of them have made $32 billion in profits. Damn this pollen down here. $32 billion in profits in the first quarter of 2011. And yet, you and I are paying upwards of $4 a gallon for gasoline. Of course, they say that's not our fault. That's the commodity speculators. We have nothing to do with it. Yada, 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 which is horse hockey. This industry is one of the most corrupt ever to destroy the planet, which is exactly what it's doing. But I got to tell you, the executives who all sat there defending the $2.1 billion they receive every year in tax breaks, they said they would be willing to give them up, those tax breaks, as part of a comprehensive reform of the tax code. Now, what does that mean? Well, it could mean anything. Rex Tillerson, the worst of the worst, the chief executive of ExxonMobil, the Prudhoe Bay disaster in Alaska still hasn't been settled. When was that? 93? 92? Was it Prudhoe Bay? You know what I'm talking about. Rex Tillerson. Said that the provisions for the oil industry, such as tax deductions for certain types of manufacturing, let me change that. He said that the provisions, such as tax deductions for certain types of manufacturing, were not special incentives, preferences, or subsidies for oil or gas, but rather standard deductions applied across all businesses in the United States. And he said, under questioning from Senator Max Baucus, a Democrat from Montana, Tillerson said that he would support repeal of the manufacturing tax credit and other tax incentives as long as all businesses were treated the same. He said, quote, repeal it for everybody. Gone. Everything for everybody everywhere ought to be on the table. End quote. That's from Rex Tillerson, CEO of Exxon. Do you understand what he's saying? He is making an offer that the United States Congress shouldn't refuse. The head of the most destructive corporation on earth, ExxonMobil, just said, if you make repeal of these tax incentives universal for everybody, we'll go along with it. Well, God damn, do you realize what this man just offered? There goes the budget problem. There goes any more questions about the funding of Social Security or Medicare or anything, education, health care. It disappears if these corporations are taxed, if the tax incentives are removed. And Rex Tillerson just said, let's all do it. Do you think he was serious? Do you think he was serious? I'm willing to take him at his word. Repeal it for everybody, he said. Everything for everybody, everywhere, ought to be on the table. Now, which one of the senators, which one of the Democratic senators immediately picked up on that and said, by God, Rex, that's a wonderful idea? Not one of them.
And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains. I've walked and I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain you're gonna fall.
Before the hour, now one more trip back to this Senate hearing the other day where the oil executives, in addition to being absolute pricks sitting there playing their little hand jive games with the senators, say that they will let go of the tax breaks if all the capitalists in America did. And you would think at that point, somebody on the Senate panel, a Democrat, would pipe up and say, oh, my God, are you serious? And then get down to serious negotiations, not in public like that. But so what happened? No, they didn't seize on that. Nobody said a word. But Senator Robert Menendez of New Jersey, who is one of the Senate tax bill's chief sponsors, demanded that one of the executives, Mulva, who is the head of ConocoPhillips, he demanded that Mulva apologize for a press release from ConocoPhillips the day before that called the tax proposal, quote, un-American, end quote. Okay? You pay your taxes, you're un-American. Son of a bitch. It used to be if you didn't pay your taxes, you were un-American. But you see, the capitalists, the corporatists have taken over our system. So now, it's newspeak. It's black is white is black, up is down. Into the memory hole it all goes. It is un-American to pay taxes. You get that? So Menendez says, quote, "I think that's beyond the pale. I was hoping you would come here and apologize for saying that." Malva said, "Nothing was intended personally." Menendez said, "So the bottom line is you're unwilling to apologize. So I'll continue to take offense." Okay, Mr. Menendez, you take your offense, and a golden opportunity to grab these people by their balls just flipped right past you and all the other Democratic senators on that panel. You folks got an offer from Rex Tillerson. You want us to cede our tax breaks, take them away from all the industries, and we'll do it. And what does Menendez talk about? You gonna apologize to me? Jesus Christ. Get this from Dennis in Seminole, Florida. This was just the other day. Progress Energy Florida, that's a company, PEF, will press ahead with plans to build a new nuclear power plant just north of Tampa Bay. A company official said the nuclear disaster looming in Japan has not altered company plans, said PEF spokesperson Sherry Jacobs. She said, quote, "We are continuing with our plans to build a new plant and two reactors in Levy County," end quote. And customers will continue paying for them. Do you get this? This is the way it works here in Georgia, too. The average customer is already being charged $6 a month. Because the power company has to save up for the $17 billion project. The plant is not expected to go online until at least 2021, 10 years from now. So the benighted consumer in Florida is paying an extra $6 a month on their bill now and for the next 10 years. Capitalism in the nuclear industry is not about delivering power. It is not about safety. It is not about the environment. Florida, hurricanes. The highest point in Florida is what? 3 inches above sea level? An earthquake in the Gulf, a tidal wave that sweeps towards the west coast of Florida. Goodbye forever. And what does young Miss Sherry Jacobs of Progress Energy Florida say?
"We're going to continue with our plans. You can all line up and kiss our asses if you want to make a big deal about this, but you will continue paying your $6 a month, all of you little suckers down here in Florida, for the next 10 years until our plant comes online. And since there's usually a cost overrun and an average delay time of, oh, I don't know, half a decade, just get used to it. 15 years you're going to be paying." The Florida Consumer Action Network director Bill Newton says it's unfair to charge customers 10 years before they get anything. Newton said, quote, "What if someone moves? Do they get a rebate? What if they die? Does it go to their estate?" Oh, come on, Mr. Newton. That's not how capitalism works. Capitalism takes your money and kicks your ass to the curb. If it's your corpse, they kick that to the curb. If it's your children, they kick them to the curb. Capitalism, Mr. Newton, as you well know, doesn't care if you live or die. You have nothing to do with it. All that has to do with this is profit. And if they can get it now, thanks to the Florida Public Services Commission, Public Utilities Commission, or whatever it's called down there, if these nuclear rat bastards can build a plant in Florida, where the ground is so sandy, houses don't even have basements. They can't build them. But they're going to put another nuclear power plant in Levy County or Levy County, whatever, north of Tampa Bay. Oh, that's nice. Plan to open in a decade, so call it 15 years. And in the meantime, the people who buy power from whoever is providing the power now, I guess it would be Progress Energy Florida. Isn't that a great name? Progress Energy Florida. Progress Energy Florida. Oh, yeah. They are paying an average of $6 a month for the next 15 years before they ever see anything, if they ever do. And if there's a nuclear meltdown or some kind of a nuclear accident at this power plant, you know what the plan is? A great big sign out front that says, run! Unbelievable. Well, I think, I hope you had as fun a week as I had. Did I say that the last hour is sponsored by Irish Dave, who wants to spread the simple message, work for the revolution? I'll see you Monday, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Weekend, Kevin Kenny, and I know where you are this weekend.